We discussed this morning in our lesson, we discussed the attitudes of people who are given the opportunity to obey the gospel and accept the power that it lies in thereof. In Romans chapter 1 verse 16, we're told that the gospel is God's power to save. And from the beginning of time, men have made a determination whether to believe or to scorn and reject God's will. And as we examine this morning, that is true in the first century as we study about the history of the church that's revealed in the gospel account for them beginning in Acts. And we look at the early church and we look at its problems that it had, and we looked at the attitudes in the first century are no different than they are in the attitudes that we deal with today. And that is true no matter where we go and where we preach. And so tonight, I want to talk about my trip that we did in April and March of this year in the Philippines, and want to give you a review of what we accomplished and what we did. I want you to know why I do this. I think it's well. You are very good, and I commend the elders here. You have been very supportive of my overseas work. I began in overseas work in the year 2000. I have made 7 trips while I have been here, and I could have never done those trips without your support and without your prayers and your encouragement. And I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that that means a lot to me. An avenue was opened to me that I never experienced before I started overseas work. I have a very different attitude and a very much of a real understanding of the power that is in God's Word. It is so tragic in my life that the things that I read in restoration history about how the gospel and the effect that it had upon men and women in that period of time in our own country, when there would be meetings that would be had for a month and they would have to be extended because there was such an outpouring where you had thousands upon thousands of people who would come to attend these meetings, you would have record numbers of conversions. You would have men and women in various denominations that would understand that they were in error, that they were wrong, and that they would give up their denominations and their creed and the wrong that they had committed, and they would convert to the simple gospel of Jesus Christ. When I read those books and I study that restoration period of our country, it just gives me such a thrill to understand that there was a time in our country where the gospel had that kind of reception. I never personally witnessed that in my life until I went overseas. And it's not just in the Philippines. You had Brother Lee here a few weeks ago, and he told you about his work in Africa. I've seen it in Western Europe. I've also known of it in India. Brother Blackaby, Randy, has been over in India. And a lot of the things that I'm going to tell you today are the same things that they experienced. And what I'm trying to tell you is that the gospel still has power. It hasn't diminished. It hasn't lost any of its power. It hasn't lost its appeal. The thing that is different is the hearts of the hearers who hear it. It's the attitude of people who hear the gospel and how they respond. And I'd be less than honest not to tell you that it's much different the kind of response I get there and the kind of response I get here. Now, I don't preach it any different. I don't do it in any different way, but it's just a whole different response when it's done over there. I went with Brother Halbrook. This was my 6th trip. This was Brother Halbrook's 38th. And we went into different places. We went from March 24th to April 23rd, approximately 30 days. We trained preachers. We spent 2 weeks in one area training 25 to 38 men for a 2-week period, who were gospel preachers that came out of other denominations who needed grounding and teaching in the fundamentals of the gospel. We preached to saints and sinners. At every one of these classes, even with the saints, we had many non-members who sent in and listened to our classes. Each of us presented about 80 public lessons. And then that's not counting the private studies that we had outside of our classes. One of the things that I appreciate about the Philippine work is you hit the ground running and you do not stop until you get back on the plane. And one of the reasons that I continue to go to the Philippines is because that the money that I collect, and it is a lot of money. And I don't want to misuse it, and I don't want to not go and not be busy in doing the Lord's work. And so, and that's one of the reasons I don't go back to Western Europe. I believe it's not a good, efficient use of the Lord's money. I believe that we spend way too much time waiting for studies, whereas in the Philippines, it's just the opposite. And Brother Lee probably told you that in Africa. You don't have to wait for studies. There's so many, you can't meet the demand. And so you're just always busy. I like that for two reasons. I believe that is spending the money wisely that people and congregations give me. And number two, it makes the time go quickly so I can get back home. And so that's one of the reasons that I appreciate the work. We have 15 baptized. And that is very remarkable considering that 85% of the people that we talked to were members of the Lord's Church. We did a lot of edifying on this trip. We went to a lot of remote places that we have not been for years to go back and try to follow up in places that we've been when we had converted people in the past. Of course, my trip begins in Dayton. And it is a long day. It is a period of 8,400 miles, and it takes 24 hours. That's 19 hours of flight time, and we have some downtime between flights. And I arrived in the Philippines at 10:45 the next day, after 26 hours from the time I began here until the time that I arrived there and got to the hotel. I hate the plane ride. The longest leg of the trip is from Dayton, from Detroit to Nagoya, Tokyo, Japan. It takes 13 hours and 10 minutes. You see four movies. You read four times. You walk and you walk and you walk in order that you don't get cramped up. And so it takes about 26 hours in total time. Now, the first place that we did is we spent some time in Manila. You always fly into Manila. That's where every trip begins. And most of the time we're just going there, spending the night, and then we're going somewhere else. But this time, we spent about 5 days in Manila, and we went to different churches in the area. Every time I'm in Manila, I go to a different church. I've never been in a place where I haven't been introduced to a new group of brethren when I go into Manila. Manila is the capital of the Philippines. 20 million of the 95 million people who live in the Philippines live in Manila. 20 million of them. It's a very congested city. To get from one end to the other, it takes you hours to go from one place to another because the traffic is so congested. Saturday, we both went to where Ben and Elias Cruz preach. This is the church at Catabon. And it's been in existence for a number of years. They built a new building 3 years ago. And they're a very active church. They're the largest church in Manila. Sunday, we went to different places. And Sunday, we spread out. Ron goes to three places, and I go to three places. We begin about 6 o'clock in the morning, and we get back about 7 o'clock at night. And that's because of all the travel time in between the places that we go. And Monday, we went to Bell Metal Shop, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then Tuesday, we were at Calabar with Edwin Day Pedro, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Now, traveling in the Philippines, it's an experience. When you travel, the highways are full of what we call tricycles, of motorcycles that are taxis, and this is the way many of them make their living. It's a very cheap mode of transportation. To ride on a taxi on a motorcycle in a sidecar cost you about 15 cents to go from one end of Manila to the other. And so this is the way that many of them make a living to support their families. And this is some of the things that you see as we're traveling from place to place. Manila is a kind of an interesting area because on one side it's very modernized. You can see there's a lot of houses, there's a lot of hotels, but on the other side it is poverty. You see people taking a bath in the gutters. You see children living in shanties all along on one side of the road, and on the other side it's more modern. It's one of the most unique places that I've ever seen in one city. This is a young man that was in traffic that was stealing an inner tube. He jumped up on the truck. We were behind him. He jumped up on the truck while it stopped in traffic. He worked the tube off, and before the truck started going, he was off. It took about maybe a minute, and he had that inner tube. And the reason he stole it, they could sell the rubber for money. And so, again, it demonstrates a problem that we've talked about. Somebody that's in poverty, they might be susceptible to steal in order to take care of their needs. We see it every day. When we went to the church in Manila where Ben Cruz preaches, Ron preached a couple lessons on problems in the church from the book of Acts. He talked about the history of the church in the book of Acts, and he talked about putting the past in the past. The reason that he taught those particular lessons, and the reason that I taught to the lessons that you see at the bottom here, is because there had been a problem in the church there. There had been a problem that had caused a little bit of a division. And the preacher there, who had been there for many years, is up in the right corner, is Ben Cruz. He's been preaching in the Philippines for 50 years. Last year he had a very severe stroke, and we thought that we were going to lose him. But he survived the stroke, but he's greatly incapacitated, and he no longer is the man that he once was. He also is one of the elders at the church, and he stepped down because of his stroke. That caused some problems at the church in Manila where he preaches, and there's been some dissension and some division, and we dealt with that for 2 days when we were there to try to bring about encouraging the brethren and trying to help in their misunderstanding about the eldership and about some responsibilities. The building is always full, and in this particular church there's an upstairs where they have their classrooms. But for our studies, they were all down. And not only are all these pews filled, there's people sitting outside, and there's people standing by the windows listening to us as we talk on this day. And by the way, these days start at 9 o'clock and end at 6 o'clock. And we only take an hour break, and all of that is teaching time. They never look at the clock. They never complain. And they always want you to stay. That's one of the remarkable things that greatly impresses me about the Philippines. I went there during Palm Sunday. Easter in the Philippines is an experience that can only be described as you have to experience it. Everywhere we went, they were selling these palms. This is one of the gentlemen that every year he takes himself and he carries his cross through town. People throw stones at him, and they nail him on the cross for about an hour. And he has a doctor there to make sure that he doesn't die. And they do that to commemorate the crucifixion and the resurrection of Christ. And I'm not talking about a few people. There's an open-air square in downtown Manila, and there were at least 10,000 people in that square on Good Friday. In Good Friday in the Philippines, everything shuts down. There is not one business that's open on Good Friday. And on Easter, there's pageants, there's floats, they do parades, and of course, they ring the bells. They start at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they ring them till noon. And it's a very important holiday in the Philippines because they are 95% Roman Catholic. And so they have a very big following and have much support there. I went on Sunday of that week. I was in Multiplup with Elijah Spirit. He's a young preacher that preaches there, and this is their building. The building is something that is built on the side of his home. It has walls. It has a fan. Doesn't have any air conditioning. And this is Elijah. He is the preacher there. He's a young man. He was converted about 5 years ago out of Pentecostalism. And he's a young man that works with the church there. Matter of fact, Elijah works with 3 other churches. Many of the Philippine preachers work with more than one church. Because they're so small and they're so poor, they go from place to place. He begins at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he gets home about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And he has 4 different places that he goes every Sunday. And so they have services that are spanned out because so he can go to each place and he has enough time to travel to get there. And so most of the preachers in the Philippines, in the rural areas, and especially in Manila, they work for more than one congregation. Next, I went to Wiriwilan in Kapga, and that is their building. It's an open air. It just has walls, and I recently just built this, and it's right by the water. It's right by the water, and this is outside, and there was about 75 people there. And we met at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I was somewhere else in the morning and couldn't get there until later in the day, so they had their services later that day. Most of the churches in Manila do not meet at night. And the reason they don't meet at night is because of travel time, because of getting people at home before it gets dark. And so most of the services happen in the morning or the afternoon. There's some churches that meet at 7 o'clock in the morning. I had preached in a couple of those when I was there. You got to get up about 5:30. And this was my third service that day. And after this, it took me 2 hours to get. And I'm in Manila, but it took me another 2.5 hours to get back to the hotel. Two were baptized at the giving of the invitation, and Llewellyn, he baptized them later after I left. We do not baptize, for the most part, in the Philippines, the Americans, because we don't want them to place any great significance on us during the baptism, so we leave it to the Filipino brethren to do it. And besides that, they give them water that I wouldn't get in. This is me this is the class time. By the way, when you meet at 3 o'clock, you have a Bible study, then you have a service. So they're there for about 2.5 hours. In the PM, this is where Ron was at. He met in the home of a man named Jimmy Bobbis. He's a son-in-law of Ben Cruz. He has a congregation in his home. As you can see, it's standing room only. There's people on the stairs, and there's also people outside sitting on chairs out in the sun. And there, that was in the afternoon, about 2:30 in the afternoon. And that is in the farthest end of Manila, and to get back to the hotel from there, it takes about 2.5 hours from there, because it's really just in the outskirts of Manila. On Monday. Now I want you to think about this with me for a minute. How many companies do you know in America that would shut down their business from 9 to 12 to have a Bible study for their employees and make it mandatory that every one of their employees attend the Bible study and pay them to be there? That's exactly what happened. Every week, the owners of this business bring in someone to teach their employees about the Bible. And they invited one of the people that we converted in the past is a retired police officer. And he arranged this study. And so we had them for 3 hours, about 50 of them. And Ron talked about Jesus Christ or Muhammad, which one is the final prophet. And I did a lesson on what do I have to do to be saved. Now, the thing that was interesting about this is we also had in the audience four denominational preachers. Two Pentecostal, one from the Alliance Church, which is kind of a community church there, and a Baptist church. After our lessons and our question and answer period, we were invited to go to the Pentecostal church and the Baptist church to go on and teach there if we would work it into their schedule. Now, brethren, that does not happen here. They ask us, they know what we're going to preach. They know what we're going to say, and yet they're willing to listen. Now, you don't always convert all of them, but you convert some of them. They have a willingness to come in and listen, even though they know going in that you don't agree with what they do. And so we got two other invitations that would be followed up by the Filipino preachers after we leave, and they'll try to make arrangements for them to get there, or the next time that somebody's in the Philippines, we'll go to those churches and we'll teach. And when we go to those churches, we don't teach about love and mercy. We teach about the things that we differ on. We teach about the covenant. We teach about that there's two covenants, Old and New Testament. We teach about the plan of salvation. And we teach about obeying God's word and not building it on emotion. We deal with the differences. And they don't get angry. And they don't throw us out. Now, in the question and answer period, it gets kind of heated. But once you open the Bible and you take them through it, they get less heated. And what you do sometimes is you cause a further study that's followed up by the Filipino preachers after we leave, And there's people that have been converted through those efforts. Next, we went to the top of the Jolly Bees. In case you don't know what that is, that's the McDonald's in the Philippines. And what they do is they have a room up on top that they rent out. We rented out the room, and we had a seminar for the preachers in Manila. There was about 20 there. And we had a three-hour study where we studied with them, and then we allowed them to ask us questions. And I had many questions. And the questions are good questions. They're problems that they deal with in the Philippines and problems that they come in contact with as they're dealing with other denominations. And you're talking about a lot of young men who have not been grounded. They have not been given the opportunity that we have, and so we can share some of our knowledge with them, and we can answer some of their questions, and we can help them in some of the problems that they have. And we always have requests for these meetings. The sad thing is we cannot fit them into our schedule always. We did this after we were done at the business. We did this, and this lasted from about 2:00 to 6:00. And whenever we can fit these things in, we do it to try to encourage the brethren and try to help them and encourage them and teach them further. Now on Tuesday, we went to the church where Edwin De Pedro preaches. And this is a little building that's attached to his house. And we went there in the afternoon, and I preached on Doesn't Matter What We Believe, and Ron gave a lesson, and then we were there at 6:30, so they wanted to feed us. One of the things about the Philippines is they're very hospitable people. They're poor people, but they're hospitable people. And they make every effort to try to accommodate you, and they are so thankful that you come and you take the time to come and study with them and to teach them. One of the things that really is difficult for me to express, and I wish you could experience, is what we deal with when we leave in any place that we preach. People that cry, that they are so grateful that we took the time to come and talk to them, that we came to teach them and encourage them. And I've never left the place where that does not happen in every year that I've been there. I wish you could see what I see. I wish you could see the good that is done by our trips. And I wish you could experience what I experienced. Your faith would be greatly encouraged. And your faith would be greatly strengthened. I wish I could take you with me just to experience it once. To show you that God's word has not lost its power. That there are still people who are hungering and thirsting after righteousness. And there are people who want to be taught, that want to be strengthened. This is an elder at the church where we did our two-week preacher training. He had a stroke last year. He had to resign. He is 90 years old. He has been an elder at that church for over 20 years. I met him when I first went there about 7 years ago. He's a very good man, and he has not lost any of his zeal and his faith for God. He just deals with a very difficult situation. This is Lego City, the Church of Christ. This is where Matt Sabayan Sr. preaches. He's up in the corner. And this is where we held the preacher training for 2 weeks. Matt Sabayan is 71 years old. He's been preaching in the Philippines since 1972. He has one of the oldest and one of the better buildings of any church that we have in Lego City. And it's three stories. The first story is where they do children's classes. The second story is the main auditorium. And the third story is where they do classes. And they're one of the few churches, there are three of them in the Philippines, that have that type of building. They have been established for many years. The reason that that's important is in that area, there are over 40 churches in that area within a two-hour radius in that part of the country. And so we pull in from many different churches. See, on the right is the books that we give every student. Every student in most classes are given $150 worth of books. They're given a new Bible. They're given a new concordance. They're given a new Bible dictionary. They're given all the class books that we use in the classes. And they're also given select commentaries like Roy Coggill's book on the New Testament church, on Roy Coggill's book of Walking by Faith, some books on different basic, Brother Harkwriter's basic Bible doctrines. It's a 4-volume set. All of these are given to every student who comes and starts the classes and finishes the classes. They have to agree to come and start and to finish. And every one of them are given books. And, of course, we pay for those books. Brother Habrill, every time he makes a trip, he buys the books, he buys the tracks, he buys the things that we send him. And what he does is he just charges it at the Guardian of Truth. His book bill right now is $6,000. And it will grow every time he does a trip. Every one of my trips, I try to help pay that book bill down. And we do that because they don't have the ability. We hand out a lot of teacher material for small kids. The women are so appreciative of things that we would take for granted. Things to teach their children. They don't have the means or the funds to do those things, so we always take that stuff over there and we leave it with them, and they're so appreciative of it. And this is downstairs. They had a women's class as we were studying upstairs with the preachers. And this is the students here on the right. As you can see, it's full. We have 38 students, but people set in. And we had an attendance of 80 every day. And there are only 38 students, and everybody else are visitors that sit in our classes. And our classes start at 8 o'clock in the morning and end at 7:30 at night, every day, 6 days a week. The man on the right, Brother Gammon here, he's one of the best song leaders I've ever heard. He has a great love for music, and he's a very enthusiastic song leader. Reminds me a lot of Brother Smith. See the man here in the blue at the bottom? He's a retired police officer. He's opened so many doors for us in the Manila area because he's a talker. There's nobody he can't talk to. He has got us in places that you can't imagine and got us opportunities to teach people that we would have never been able to get into because of his connections and being a police officer in the city of Manila. He's very well known. He's the most decorated police officer that ever served in the Philippines. And he's opened a lot of doors for us to be able to teach a lot of people. This is on Sunday at Brother Vic Domingo's, where Brother Vic Domingo preaches. He's 72 years old. He's been preaching for 45 years in the Philippines. He was converted by Brother Matt Sabayan. And he has one of the nicer buildings in the Philippines. They love banners. Wherever we go, they have a banner out to welcome us. And this is the outside of their building. By the way, they built this building over a period of about 10 years. They did it a little bit at a time as they had their funds. And it's one of the nicer buildings, but it has no air conditioning. All it has is fans. This is a graduation. We have a graduation. And I don't know if you can see the diploma here. That was made by one of the members of the church who was in a business. He owns his own business. He paid himself for every one of the diplomas and also paid for the lunch that they had after the class was over for over 150 people out of his own pocket, because he was so encouraged by the good that he thinks these classes do. Now, not every Filipino could do that. Very few could do that. But the people who do have means, and in the Philippines there is no middle class. In the Philippines, you either have or the have-nots, and there is no middle class. And so the people who do have money and do have ability, they use it to a lot of the good, to do good with it. This is some more. The man on the right, in the bottom, in the shirt by the man that's standing by the man with the diploma, that's Jonathan Carreño. Brother Carreño is probably one of the hardest-working preachers that I know in the Philippines. He does all of our scheduling. He goes and sets up all of our venues. He sets up all of our travel. Anywhere we go, he sets our itinerary. And what he does is he goes to where we have the venues and he negotiates a price. He gets it the cheapest that he can and that it meets all the needs that we need. We need power so we can run. We found in the last few years that we could cover more material with PowerPoint. And so we go to places where they have electricity, and they're very centrally located so we can get more people in. He goes and he negotiates those prices. He sets up our lodging in the hotels. He sets up all our travel itinerary, airplanes, buses, ferries, all night, whatever we need. He sets all of it up. Now, Brother Carreño, before he comes from a line of preachers, his father Ramon Carreño has been preaching in the Philippines for 50 years. He left a very lucrative job in order to preach the gospel. He was working for a company where he had a car, he had a salary, he took two trips abroad every year, and he had an expense account. And he dealt with the very things that we dealt with. He went in and set up things for businesses and for accounts, so he knew how to do all that. He gave that up to preach the gospel. Today he preaches the gospel full time, and his monthly support is $600 a month. Because he had a burning to preach the gospel. I admire men like that. He had a real dedication and love for the truth. He's a very good friend. This is the graduation picture of the people who attended the class on Friday, April the 16th. That's another big thing in the Philippines, pictures. They don't have much, but they got a camera. And they take pictures of everything. It doesn't matter. After the class is over, you're going to be there an hour taking pictures. This is some of the things that are in the area where we're at. You see that on the, that's how they drive their rice. It's on the road. They just put it on the road and drive it in the sun. You think everybody will run over it. No, they leave it alone. That's how they drive their rice, and then they gather it up. And then what they do is they put it in bags. And it's lined all around the highway. And then a truck comes by and picks it up. It's very manual. It's very strenuous. It takes hours a day, and they do it in the hot sun. And that is a water buffalo that they use like an ox. I've seen six-year-old little kids leading one of those or sitting on one of those plowing in a field. Portable Walmart in the top. Believe it or not, there's somebody riding in there you can't see, but they're riding in the sidecar. That's a caribou taxi. In the rural areas, they use that as a taxi. And that's a new bridge that they just built. And I found out this year, for the first time, they grow tobacco in the Philippines. I didn't know that. This was the first year when I was up in that area, they had big tobacco fields. And I looked out there and I said, you know, that looks like tobacco. Brother Saban says, well, it is tobacco. What else would you think it would be? I said, well, I didn't know you grew tobacco. And then it hit me how hot it is there. Well, yeah, they can grow tobacco because of the hot weather they have. Then the last week, we went to someplace different every day. Every day we went somewhere, we went to the hotel, we slept, we got up, we went to another place, we slept, we got up, and that's the way the last 6 days went. These are the places that we were in for those 6 days. Ron, he's adventurous, I am not. We were going to Baguio City. And out in Baguio City, there's a big lake. And it was pretty foggy. It looked like it was going to rain. And they had this two planks that led out to this little balcony, weird balcony. And he made it out there so he could get this picture. The last thing he told me when he walked out there, he says, if I fall, tell Donna that I love her. He said, I'll do that because I'm not jumping down that cliff to come and get you. Now, in April the 17th, we were in Tagigaraw to witness the marriage of Rody Gumpad's daughter, Jennifer. She married an American named Ryan Thomas, who was from Michigan. And Ron and me had a part in the wedding. And then on Sunday, we preached in Tagigaraw. And on Sunday afternoon, Ron went to the jail where Willie Pastor is, to preach in the jail and to see Willie Pastor. That's the man who just got sent to jail for 68 years for a murder that he was cleared of when he was 17 years old. He's 33 today. He's married. He has four children. Those are his daughters, and that's his wife. And Ron went there to see him. He's doing very well. He's converted 10 people while he's been in jail. He has the respect of the warden. He has the respect of the guards, and they allow him to have worship services and private Bible studies every day. And they respect him, and that's working in his benefit because now a local official has taken up his cause to try to get him released out of prison because he is wrongfully there. You've got to admire the faith of a man who has to leave his family, leave his children, and go to jail, and the first thing he does when he gets to jail is to set up a Bible study to teach the inmates who are incarcerated with him. But brethren, if that doesn't strengthen your faith, nothing will. You talk about making a good, a bad situation, making the best you can. He is living testimony how you do that. Now this is a building. Brother Domi Jacob preaches in this building. This building has been falling apart. It was built by the military, people that were in the military in the 70s in the Philippines. They built this building in the 70s. It had been falling apart. Over time, individuals have contributed money to rebuild this building. And we got to spend about an hour and a half here to see how much progress they have made. And they made a lot of progress. They almost had to close the services down because the building was crumbling and it was a danger for them to be in. They were worried about being hit by the cement. Now they have new walls up. They have a new roof. They have they put new windows, new places for windows, and they resurfaced the thing. There's absolutely no air in this building. I mean, absolutely none. They got a fan. I don't know why they got it, because it doesn't do anything. And when you preach there, you can guarantee that when you leave, you're going to be wet. Because it is, you're going to be wet. They're not going to be wet, but you're going to be wet because it's so humid. I found a place that it is cool in the Philippines. I mean, 70 degrees. That's cool. They got jackets on. They're freezing to death. I was in an oasis. It's called Baguio City. But to get there, you have to drive through the mountains. And we had to stop four times to pour water on his brakes because we burned out his brake pads getting to Baguio City. We did this three times while we were going to Baguio City. It took us about 5 hours of driving to get there, and we got there on Sunday night about 9 o'clock. This is where in Baguio City at the Venice Hotel. We had that. This is a venue. We baptized two there. We had 120 in attendance. We started our classes at 8 o'clock and ended at 6 o'clock. Rody Gumpad was with us on this trip. He was with us for the whole week. And Rosendo Gumpad is his brother, and he preaches in Baguio City. And what was interesting about this particular place, they had not been there in many years. It had been about 7 or 8 years to the last time they visited there. Because it's up in the mountains. And it's a very beautiful place. And like I said, it's the coolest place that I've ever been in the Philippines. And it's a vacation. It's a resort area. It was built by the Americans when they were in the Philippines for R&R for their people. When they were coming out of the Philippines, they would send them down there for R&R for 3 or 4 days. And they're the ones that built the city. On a Tuesday, we went to a civic center. This was in the middle of town, and we baptized three there. On the bottom here, Carlos Domingo is a man who's working on a new church building, and it's behind him there. This man and Brother Ron has, with the people he knows, he's been able to get some funding for him through some individuals to finish that building, and they'll hope to be done with it by next year. Again, all they want are a floor and the walls and a covering. That's all they're looking for. That's all they want. They don't want nothing elaborate. They just want some walls, they want a floor, and they want something to keep the heat and the rain off of them. And so that is a functional building, and that is probably 80% of all the buildings. That's the kind of buildings they are. This is me preaching in the Civic Center. Next, we went to the Civic Center in Sinan, and we had about 120 in attendance there. I was teaching a Brother Craig Thomas, that's Lion Thomas's father. He preaches in a little town in Flint, Michigan. He preaches for a congregation of 8 people and has been there for a long time. And he accompanied us the last week we were in the Philippines. Then we preached in Carabanchel City, and this was in a hotel, and we used their meeting room, and we had preachers from all over that area for that particular service. And we had, I spoke, Rody Gumpad spoke, and Ron spoke. And we were there. We only had that for a limited time. We had it from about 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. This is a baptismal font. Looks like a jar, doesn't it? That lid comes off, And what they do is there's a ladder that's on the other side, and they put them in the jug, and they get down on their knees, and they submerge them. That's how they baptize them. And I'd never seen one of those. Those were the first ones that I ever saw. And it's kind of interesting when they baptize somebody that's tall, because he's really crunched when he gets in there. But you know what? That doesn't happen in the Philippines very much, because most of the people are short in stature. This is him coming. And another thing they do is they baptize in rain barrels. That water is collected from the rain. And they baptize him in the same rain. They put him on his knees, and they completely submerge him in a rain barrel. We went with three baptisms like that in Baguio City. Now, why do I go? That's why I go. Because brethren are edified, the gospel is taught, and people are converted. The one thing that they look at us is they think that we're very rich people. And by their standards, we probably are. In their eyes, we are rich. But brethren, I've never been around a more gracious people, a more happy people, and people that are so full of thanksgiving for your willingness to go there. I want to thank this congregation. Every year I have gone to the Philippines, you have given me over $1,000 to buy Bibles. And that's enabled me to pass out in the six trips I've made, I've been able to pass out over 1,000 Bibles. And I would have never been able to do that had you not been generous with your funds in order for me to do that. I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that I am so grateful that you encouraged me to do this work. My faith has been strengthened. I think a lot of good has been accomplished. And another thing that I think it's done is it's helped us to understand that we don't know how long the door will be open in the Philippines. There will come a time when that door will be shut. And we'll no longer be able to come and go. And it's beginning to close. And the reason that it's beginning to close is because of the cost involved in going. It's very expensive to make one of these trips. And these trips could not be made without the help of churches and individuals. Because we don't have the money to fund our own trips. And every trip that I've taken is because of good brethren in churches and individuals who have supported me. If you have not seen my report, it's on the back. On the very back of that report, there is a financial statement that tells all the money I collected and what I did with every dime that I've collected. I take it very seriously when individuals and the churches give me money to go and do a work like that, that you know how that money is being used, that you know how it's being spent. And so every dollar that you gave me to buy Bibles, that's exactly what I did with it. And you know how conscientious these brethren are? After I leave, they send me back the receipt to show me that they bought the Bibles so that they know that everything is above board. That's the kind of people they are. And so, I thank you very much for allowing me to go. And any good that these trips do, you have a share in that. Because you pray for me, you encourage me, and you give me the things that I need to be able to go. I want to thank Mike, and I want to thank John. They have always supported me, and the elders that we had before them. They have always supported me in doing that work, and I could not go without their support. And I want you to know that I thank you for that. I greatly appreciate it. We don't want to close this service. I have not given up that we cannot convert people in our own country. But it can only be done in the same way that it's been done from the very first. And that is by preaching the gospel. I don't know any other way to do it. I want to offer you the same thing I offered them, to come to Christ. It's not going to take away your poverty. It's not going to take away your financial problems. It's not going to make everything better in your life. But it will help you in the greatest problem that you have, and that is your relationship with God. It will take care of the sin problem. That's why Christ came. That's why he died. That's why he left this book, that we might know how we could gain access to his son's blood, that we might be able to have a relationship with our Lord that can see us through eternity. And by running obedience to the gospel, you can be part of his family. You can have the spiritual benefit of contacting the blood of Christ that will wash away your sin, and you can become one of his children. And you can be in the body of Christ. You can be a child of the King, and you can be a joint heir with Christ, and you can have a hope of everlasting life. You know why people in poverty gravitate to that message? Because what the Lord offers them is something they can never attain to in life. But this gift is for every man and woman. You remember the Great Commission. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Every creature is important. Every creature in this country, every creature in the Philippines, and every person in any other opportunity where we have doors open to spread the gospel, we should walk through those doors. And we should try to reach the lost. That's why we were put here. That's the Lord's business. And that's our business if we're His children. If you're here and you are a Christian, and you've wandered back into the world, and you've lost sight of your responsibility and your duty to God, we'll pray with you and for you that God will forgive you. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, we bid you come forth together with us.